Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Spring, is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the new Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. These must-have travel shoes have a lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit that made them the most packable shoes ever. Plus, they're comfy right out of the box. That means more comfort and less baggage. Experience how Allbirds is redefining comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's ALLBIRDS.com, code SUPER24.
Deep. Oh, it's in! Chloe Kelly!
Welcome back to the Football Ramble's Guide to your trail of breadcrumbs leading you through the dark forest of football. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Pete Donaldson.
When you remember a special moment in football on TV, you recall the sound. The guttural roar of anticipation from the crowd. And the release as the ball smashes into the net. There's also always a voice.
And here comes Hurst. He's got some people on the pitch. They think it's all over. It is now. It's four.
It was only in 1927 that a football game was first broadcast on radio, and football's bigwigs were worried that it would draw crowds away from the terraces.
The preliminaries are over, and what an ideal afternoon for football. There goes the whistle, and now we're all.
In the early 1930s, at which point football was an established presence on BBC Radio, the Football League even banned its games from being broadcast to avoid the bite of the recession. We've come a long way since then. Football commentators define our experience of the game, and for every iconic line, there's also a commentator missing the first 5 minutes of the second half because he was squeezing out a jobber. So today we're asking what makes a great commentator, what makes a shit one, and some of our favourite commentary quirks from around the globe. From the good, the poetic, to the Gary Neville orgasms, this is the Football Ramble's Guide to Commentary.
Hasn't he done well?
And who cares?
Yes, quite frankly, my goodness. Gentlemen, I'd like to start with this question. If you started football broadcasting all over again, how would you like commentators to describe a game to you?
Oh,
well,
emojis.
I like the differentiation between radio and TV, which I think has been quite a bit blurred now.
Mm.
So I think when you have the fact that it feels a bit like commentators come from radio into TV, they graduate into TV, which for me as an audio fan is I think wrong. They tend to apply their radio stuff onto the TV stuff. I don't think you need to do it. So the answer to your question, Marcus, would be I'd like him to be a bit more sparing.
Yes.
Because I'd like to be able to paint my own pictures and draw my own kind of conclusions as much as I can. I don't really feel like I need it spoon-fed. So to me, on TV, keep it light.
Yeah. Yes. You don't have to describe everything.
No.
You're basically, and we're all agreed here, we're agreeing with Barry Davis.
But I should say this.
Well, Barry would say that.
It's a hard job.
A very
it's a
hard
really
job.
Hard job.
Very
Much
hard
harder
job.
Than we probably give it credit for.
I think unless you've had a go at some sort of commentary, I think it's so difficult to.
It's exhausting.
Absolutely.
I do a commentary over a quarter of an hour, like video game, or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, I remember.
Like a football game, and it's impossible. Absolutely impossible
to speak
with authority. Yeah. I find that difficult anyway. But to speak with authority and be organised with your words and get it all out at pace. Speed, identify players, identify what's going on, the gravity of everything, the last time this happened, my God, you have to be administratively so incredibly ordered.
You're absolutely right. And not repeat yourself as well. Yeah. Not think, oh, that was a nice little line. I'll use that in three games' time. No, we've noticed that. It's a very, very tough
and
job.
And you have to do a lot of research as well. How about you? How would you like it to be described?
Every budding commentator, I'd play them some Barry Davis lines again. Mm. As close to that, please.
As possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's just going to be sure about Barry Davis, isn't it?
we'll rein him in a bit.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
The very first time BBC Radio broadcast a football match was on January 22nd, 1927, a Division One clash between Arsenal and Sheffield United, with a former rugby player called Henry Blythe Thornhill Wakelam calling the shots.
You basically had to be a member of the aristocracy to be anywhere near the BBC back in those days.
Indeed. Yeah. This was how new it was. The Radio Times published a diagram of a football pitch divided into 8 numbered squares. While Wakelam, shame not to give him his full title, but we could be here all day, described the action, another voice would call out numbers corresponding to the area of the pitch the action was taking place, so listeners could follow the match at home. Now, this was thought to be the origins of the phrase back to square one.
I know
there are other theories and snakes and ladders and all that, but that is one credible theory.
No, we're having
that
one on this
show.
We're having the snakes and ladders show. The snakes big snakes and ladders. Big board game.
Yeah.
Can fuck off, quite frankly.
The snakes belong where they belong. FIFA house.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Do you want to see a picture of that commentator?
Look at that.
Right, okay.
He would not be having that moustache.
It's Robert Mugabe at best.
It's Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin.
It's Adolf Hitler.
Charlie Chaplin, because that, as you say, style of tash did very quickly go out of fashion. but yes, Wakelam and the boys and girls, again, back in those days, probably just boys, called the match from a wooden hut that resembled a garden shed. Right. You see, not everything was better in the past.
Yeah.
Moustaches for one.
I'd love to put Steve McManaman in the garden shed.
I bet you would.
And never let him out.
It's a tactics truck. Is it now? Yeah. All right, I'm just going to have a look in. Hey, this is just a shed.
It's a tactics shed.
Oh dear.
Oh, no. Steve, water the tomatoes, will you?
Well, Wakelam was the BBC's first commentator, and he also covered cricket and tennis, including an infamous episode at Wimbledon during which he accidentally set fire to his notes, but carried on regardless.
Back to square one.
Fortunately, Cliff Richard was there to give a second opinion.
Oh, here it is.
Don't bring that in.
Cliff Richard probably was fucking there.
And you sort of think, notice, you sort of think, right, how the hell did he eat cigarettes, everyone smoking, pipes, whatever. Yeah.
Oh, dear. The diagram, though, method, continued until the mid-1930s.
So the voice, the kind of what would be identified now, I suppose, as the BBC Pathé type voice.
Yes.
It's gone back to square one.
Yeah, it's an amazing voice. I can remember during lockdown when we were doing Peach Film Club and we had the Arsenal Stadium mystery.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And all the actors spoke like that.
Yeah. I think everybody did. Even in the United States, if you... what's the film? Is it Dial M for Murder?
Yeah.
I saw that not that long ago. It's kind of like they sound very, very similar. It was a bit of American twang, funnily enough.
Yeah, but it's not a full American accent.
No, it isn't. Yeah. It's quite interesting. But I think in other parts of the world, they kind of spoke like that in their respective languages and
I
so
love
on.
The idea of you at home watching Dial M for Murder.
What a quaint
cradling
scene.
A child.
What makes you think
I don't know, I just think it's
home.
Very quaint. You've got the... wait, you've got a fan park for Dial M for Murder?
What is it, the talking picture house? Wife, I'm going to the talkies.
It's not a drive through.
Don't forget to take your heroin.
Drive in. Yeah, drive through for burgers.
I know, indeed. Yeah. And we've won the World Cup. And that's that.
Yeah.
But of course, that was in the 1960s. Gentlemen, his name has appeared already a couple of times at least.
We're
going
to get into what makes a great commentator, aren't we?
We are, yes. Yeah. The iconic voice. And Barry Davis is where we begin. Where else?
BD.
Quite frankly.
Mm. Basher.
Well, he called the shots for the BBC for 35 years, covered 10 World Cups and 7 European Championships. But because of John Motson being there, he only commentated, I think, on, was it 2 or 3 major finals?
There was a bit of a, between Basher D and John Motson, a.k.a. Motty,
yeah.
There was a bit of a kind of power struggle, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And I think I get the impression that Basher was just a bit too...
Wasn't as political. I think.
Yeah, I just didn't think he cared as
Motty's
much.
Motty's got. Yeah, he's a purist, and Motty was quite into the character of Motty. Do you know what I mean?
There's
the sheepskin jacket was kind of him. It's kind of all that kind
but
of. I'm Motty.
No, you're right. You're right.
Muddy. You ready for me, baby? I'm Muddy.
It just keeps getting better and better and better. Yeah. Well, Barry Davis, though, I think that he would often he would really put his opinion in there sometimes, which isn't bad for a commentator. Mm. But I remember, because 1990 World Cup was where I came into football. Mm. I'm sure perhaps you
I was the same, yeah.
He would, England are not doing very, Cameroon are passing the ball better. Yeah. Like, he would really stick the
boot in. Admonish them, yeah.
Whereas I don't think Motson was that, I don't know, negative's the right word. Maybe, I don't know what it was, but Davis certainly gave it plenty.
Davis had a bit more RP to him, though, I think. So I think when he sort of brought out his character and brought out his strong opinions, very nasally and kind of like, kind of bringing
I also think
quite posh.
I've never worked with Barry Davis, but I have worked with John Motson. He used to come in every Friday at TalkSport. Mm. And he's very much, this is sounds like a really obvious thing to say, but I think in the context of this conversation, it's relevant. He's kind of very interested in the stats and describing something that's happening and saying that's the first time that's happened or that hasn't happened since then.
Sure.
Whereas I think Barry was much more about interpreting the events and almost trying to be the temperature check for the nation kind of thing.
Yeah, very well put. Yes.
And so that's the difference between them. I think it's personally, I've got nothing against Motson and his career.
Oh, but he's a phenomenal commentator.
But I personally feel like the BBC maybe should have gone down the Basher D route rather than the Motson route, because eventually it was like Highlander, there could only be one. And there weren't that many channels then either.
Yeah, you're right.
But Barry came into his own in the mid-70s with the Francis Lee Derby Man City clip, didn't he? Which is the most iconic thing he did, and I think is what he's still most known for now, probably.
Lee, interesting. Very interesting. Oh, look at his face. Just look at his face.
I think what I love about Barry Davis compared to some other commentators and commentary styles is it was right in the moment.
Yeah.
It wasn't a case of, and that's his third goal. And it was right there. And there were times when I was looking back at the commentary that he did. This is how I spend some of my time. It was a group game in the 1990 World Cup between West Germany and Colombia.
Die Them for Murder had finished. Got an hour to kill.
I got home by this point.
Dropped off your high school sweetheart. Went to the diner.
Yeah, yeah. Slipped on my leather jacket. had a milkshake and I thought I'll treat myself, to speak. So I was watching the highlights of this game. And like, you know, a shot just goes past. He just makes those noises. It's like he... a little bit. Slightly different. But he was... Because Colombia just needed a draw to go through.
Yeah.
And they're quite a talented side with Valderrama and so on.
And they did go through, of course.
And they did go through. But they were playing West Germany, who were already through. They concede late on. And Davis just slaughters
them. He's fuming,
He's going, it is ridiculous. Had they have played... And then as Colombia equalised moments after, he's berating Valderrama and saying... Oh, well, what a shame. He could have been such a credit for his country. They could have come out and played. They could have been better. And suddenly, and then he slips a lovely ball through to Rincon. But suddenly a man who's been so dead has come alive. And it's unbelievable, you know, and suddenly it's a goal. And but he would get excited. I think that's the great thing. He would talk about how annoyed and disappointing he was in people. But then he would get very excited with his commentary on the Dennis Bergkamp goal for Argentina in 98 against Argentina, for the Netherlands. People talk about the Dutch commentary, which was obviously great. But Barry Davis, for me, that is my favourite piece of commentary of all time.
Mm.
Because he just screams, oh, what a goal! And that's all it needed.
And that's the thing, isn't it, Pete? Because we're asking what makes a great commentator. For me, it's about almost providing the punctuation to what's happening.
Totally.
Yeah. Gears. You've got to have gears.
It isn't about you. It's about the game. Yeah. People aren't here to listen to you.
Yeah.
They're here to watch the game. And I think even, and we'll come on to this, I'm sure, but even some of the more articulate, flowery stuff that, say, your Drurys do, I personally even find that a bit overwrought because I don't think that's the point of it. Mm. But what do you think when you're looking for a commentator? You just want it to tell you what's going on? Because I understand that I'm a complete nerd for football, so lots of people who don't know about football may want loads of shit to fucking be told to them. But I don't think that anyone here is like that, are they?
But it's a little bit like... but again, it's the same difference between like radio commentary and TV commentary. We're only watching it. You don't need to dress up. Give us the stakes. Don't explain... You don't need to explain. Just give us the stakes, and then when the thing happens that we hope or detest the idea of happening happens, we'll do it ourselves and sound exciting and have those gears. Mm-hmm. Be like Barry Davies. Yeah. Be slightly plummy, kind of vocally quite reserved character. But when it fucking comes alive, alive. You are not the star of the show. You don't need to have these clearly fucking pre-prepared little descriptions. It's like watching the wrestling sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like you know that there's going to be a spot. You know that someone's going to fall off a cage or you know, crush somebody on a ladder or something. Like, so you've already got that line prepared.
Sure.
And you can tell half of these commentators have these things. I really like the naturalistic style of commentary. I'm a Jim Proudfoot man.
Oh, yeah. I think Jim's good.
But you're right, though, because, and again, when Pat Bonner made that error in 94 for Ireland, Ireland had the goodwill of a lot of people. Obviously, none of the British nations qualified, but Ireland did, and being sort of the closest nation to Britain, everyone got involved and so on, and they're a likeable side. And when Pat Bonner makes that mistake, Pat Bonner, because that was the feeling.
The Pope would have saved it.
The Pope would have saved it. That was in the 1990 World Cup.
On the radio front, though, and Pete's touched on this, I just want to come in on it, the idea of the difference between radio and TV. Mm-hmm. And it may be because it's my generation or because I grew up listening to football on the radio or whatever. I do think that when you are in a situation where you can't get to a game, right? So say you're driving home from somewhere, you're driving the car and you only got the radio as an option. And if you listen to, and I do think Jim Proudfoot on TalkSport is really good, but the Five Live team, when you get a good combination, you get a John Murray or an Ian Dennis or an Alistair Bruce Ball or, you know, going back a bit further, a couple of others, Mike Ingham, those kind of people. Like, it's actually unbeatable.
Yes.
Because it's because they do it in such a clever way that you're actually painting the pictures yourself.
Totally.
And of course, it's always going to be complementary to the vision because you want to watch it. So what it does, the best radio commentary for me is like, right, as soon as I get home, I need to watch that goal because the way they described it sounds amazing. And you're always going to instinctively do that. But they are providing such an amazing service because they have a license to give you the way to paint the pictures. They don't have to overload it with talking because you can't leave any dead air or whatever. But that's bled into TV far too much.
But
and also I think it's bled into TV as in like that. There's not as much of it on TV, but certainly, you know, the Alan Green sort of dour kind of like, I can't even be asked to be here kind of.
Yeah, he was probably, for my personal taste, he was the worst example of it. When he was good, he was great.
Yeah.
But he would go way over the top.
I think sometimes we confuse being good with our nostalgia, so to speak. And
true.
This is not where this sits, but I think Mick Lowe's on, you've probably not heard a lot of him, but on Metro and BBC Radio Newcastle back in the day, there are so many moments in my life and consuming football moments in my life. I didn't have access to the match.
I didn't have access to the
And it was just him and Anderson. And he was just, he just had a lovely bite to his voice.
Yeah.
And he did have those gears.
Yeah.
He'd go up, he'd go down. I think John Murray's dad said that if his son and Mick Lowe's were both covering the Newcastle match, one for Five Live and one for BBC Radio Newcastle, he'd rather listen to to Mick Lowe's. I'll just read this little story out. He said, I was in the office one day and a little old lady called and said she was 76 and she'd recently lost her husband. She asked if I could send my commentary over for Philippe Albert's goal against Man United because she wanted to play it at the funeral. We got it on a cassette for her and they played it as the coffin was going in. He said that's what he wanted to go out to. He wanted to go out to Philippe Albert's 5-1 goal.
Goodness.
And it was just radio commentary.
That's show you what it means to people's lives,
but
right?
That's not the Sky commentary. That's not the famous Albert. Yeah. It's the Mick Lowe's commentary.
It's almost like the relationship between the commentator and the listener because, as you say, you're painting these pictures. You're almost trusting them.
Yeah.
You're saying, you're telling me what's happening in this event that I'm very interested in. There is an element of trust there. So, well, let's talk about Martin Tyler then, who you would think of his best moments to be a bit more recent than Barry Davies, as we've mentioned there, even though obviously Tyler is
been around for ages.
No spring chicken. You know, he's had an amazing career. And of course, his Aguero moment when Manchester City won the title on the day was you know,
iconic.
Absolutely iconic in the fullest sense of the word.
The City are still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero.
I think that's brilliant because there's a few seconds,
a much bigger gap than you think.
Absolutely right. He lets you just take it all in because he's probably taking it all in himself.
Yeah. I think this is a really iconic moment for obvious reasons because of the football itself. But the commentary is perfect, and I actually think the most interesting part of this, from a commentary point of view, without being too nerdy about it, is it's iconic because it's quite different to what Martin Tyler's normally like. Mm. For me, and I said this in the Ramble book actually, because I wrote a bit about commentators in there. For me, there's an element of commentary, a commentator up on that gantry back in the day, and now they're all in media centres now. But back in the day, they were put out in some gantry in the middle of nowhere, and it was almost like some kind of ersatz, like colonial outpost, where they would just have to do their own thing, and they would never really get reprimanded properly unless they did something ridiculous, and they would be able to, they'd have a bit of the kind of, I can do my own thing here. And I've always felt Martin Tyler has been far too much of a company man. He's been far too much of a kind of, I'm not Martin Tyler, I'm Sky Sports Martin
Tyler. Yeah, I'm shilling the product, whatever Sky Sports product has got. Yeah,
I think that's been put upon him by Sky, obviously.
Fine, but I think the best commentators would find a way to still be a little bit off-piste. And here I think you're seeing the distillation of the pure Martin Tyler commentary skill, which I would love to see more of, but you don't see more of it now. And I think obviously he's not now. I personally don't think he's as good as he was anyway. But that moment there, when you play it to me there, the biggest surprise for me is exactly what you've said. The pause and almost he's experiencing it with you, which I think is what great commentary should be. We don't want to hear that's Aguero's 25th goal of the season or whatever. We want to hear that moment. Yeah.
That's 25.
Well, it is.
That's all he says.
That's the record.
Goal number, well done him.
Oh,
goodbye.
Dear. But he says, you know, words to the effect, you know, I swear you'll see never see anything like this again or whatever. And you're right, when you saw that, it was incredible.
But we live in an age where we can watch it at any point. We can watch it.
But I mean, other times, was it, you know, Tony Adams is running through the middle, can you believe it? Yeah. And that's his voice when it goes. I think it was another great piece of commentary, I forget which game, where the ball goes in and he just goes, that. It's just the noise. I think, again, it's that's what football do, dear. Yeah. Quite incredibly, by the way, at an event in May this year, marking the 10-year anniversary of all that stuff of Manchester City winning the league and so on, Martin Tyler was booed by Manchester City fans when he took to the stage because he's often been accused of being a Manchester United fan because he gets more excited for their goals than for Liverpool and Manchester City.
That is the most football fan thing ever.
I mean, there's things on Twitter. Liverpool fans are always moaning that when Liverpool score goals, he goes, and Liverpool have gone 1-0 up and it's been coming. Whereas when Man City score, it's kind of like, he can't support them all.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
That's true. I think it's kind of indicative of the entitlement of football fans generally these days. Mm-hmm. I also note in that event, apparently someone threw a pint at Gael Clichy.
Yeah, so,
that's the kind of night it was.
We have to stay and focus this on football commentators.
Yeah.
But yes, the stick and the dog's abuse they get point in case here is absolutely ridiculous. And I think that you know, having spoken with Clive Tilsley a number of times, because we've met him a few times over the years,
lovely
chap.
Clive,
The crap that commentators have to put up with, and again, just sit anybody in that commentary box and go, "Go on then, big boy, see what you."
So I think with Clive, who I think we're going to come on to at some point, with Clive around that time when it was like the internet was making that transition that Pete always talks about from the Wild West into something a little bit more serious.
Sure.
People, what happened was mainstream broadcasters were starting to take notice of what people on the internet were saying.
Yeah.
And Clive, and he was with Andy Townsend at the time, who Andy Townsend, again, is brilliant on the radio.
Right.
He's so good because he's actually quite articulate. And he's obviously able to process things quickly, which you need to do. Mm. And he it doesn't feel like he's talking too much because it's the radio. Mm-hmm. So it works perfectly. On the TV, obviously, with him and Clive, not for me, Clive, that became a thing.
Yeah.
Because I think that they kind of got a little bit in a bubble and they didn't really realise that everyone was saying this is a bit shit. And for the first time, everyone had this voice that everyone was reading.
Yeah.
And we were kind of part of that because we were, as football fans, we were saying, isn't this funny, taking the piss out of it, the way we take the piss out of everything. And then I think Tilsley, to be fair to him, and we, as you said, we've met him and he's a very, very generous guy with his time and clearly cares a lot about his job and works really hard at it because the prep, which we haven't mentioned yet, by the way, the prep is fucking unbelievable.
Yeah.
He did change and he did become almost a far better commentator off the back of it.
Yes.
I don't know why. Maybe he just went into a new phase of his life or decided to approach it a slightly different way. But I think now, sorry to make this point about TV and radio again, when they binned off Clive and ITV for Sam Matterface, who I like on the radio particularly, it did become a little bit odd because people were like, hang on, Clive's doing a great job here. And Clive came out and said himself he didn't want to leave. So it was kind of an odd situation. I think Clive was good, then kind of fell off a bit and then became good again.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think Clive Tyldesley, and also a very iconic voice and so many iconic moments, of course. And I think actually Clive Tyldesley was you know, when he would have first started, it would have been in the shadow of Barry Davis and John Motson. They were the ones, you know, Barry Davis and John Motson. It was a bit like, you know, Man City and Liverpool at the moment kind of thing. And Motson was a great commentator, had great lines as well. We should make that absolutely clear. We've talked a lot about Barry Davis and we could have talked a lot more about John Motson, but there's only a certain amount of time and, you know, and so on. But they were superb. Whereas Clive Tyldesley had a bit of his own niche, really, with Champions League football on TV.
On ITV,
On ITV, of course. And I mean, but some of the lines he came out with were great. And yes, he did get a little bit cheesy, I think, at times when he had a little bit of a dip in form, but he came back. But that line when...
Remember the name?
Wayne Rooney scored.
That's a brilliant line. That's one of the greatest lines. Remember the name.
It's superb. It's perfect.
And it's proven to be very prescient as well.
Absolutely right. Yeah, Wayne Rooney's played his part in that.
He's done Clive a solid there.
He does very lovely noughts as well.
He sells them.
Yeah, I think Chris Stark from Radio 1 helped him set up a little business.
People love him. Yeah. His handwriting is beautiful.
That's nice.
Stunning. Yeah, I love good handwriting.
Calligraphy.
Indeed as well. I mean, again, you mentioned Peter Drury. Just a quick mention for him. Wonderful man. I actually quite like his enthusiasm. Different, because again, with Motson and Davis, to me, they are the gold standard, which may never be reached again, and that's no great shame, you know. But Drury, I like his enthusiasm, but I know.
Well, no, I find it overwrought, but I do. What I would say is, and I promise I'm not just being contrary here, because I know Peter Drury is very popular, and you know, Brassel, for example, absolutely loves him, and I get it. I think if you are going to do this flowery, overwrought thing, you got to do it well. And he does do it really well. Mm. So he writes them and they're quite well written and they make sense. And it's not like a spoonerism or like a weird cliche. It always does seem to be quite surprising. But to me, I wonder if it's actually a little bit detracting from what we're actually supposed to be watching. Well, which is where I come from on this.
Let me play you this one then.
Can I change my opinion? That was like hairs on the back of the neck.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
He can't have planned that because he didn't know anything that's going to happen.
But it's
the Greek god in Rome, he definitely planned that.
Yeah, okay. So I understand what we've just been saying about Barry Davis, the old style, blah, 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 blah. But I think Drury is so enthusiastic and so infectious with that, I kind of give him a bit of a pass.
You don't like it?
I didn't enjoy that particular clip.
It's from when Robert came back against Barcelona in the Champions League in 2018, right?
Do you
agree with me that it can come across as overwrought?
Overwrought, pre-written, even though, you know, in that case, possibly it wasn't.
Because Sam Matterface does a lot of pre-written stuff. He gets a lot of criticism for.
But I think Drury and Tyldesley, just going back to him, I think you're right in what you say with you know, internet and so on coming forth, because Barry Davis, he finished in 2004. And so would have been actually probably less conscious about what people thought of him. Because unless you grab him in the pub...
And wouldn't have given a shit.
Yeah, well, as well. But
which I like.
Yes,
but unless you... house.
But unless... It's an early kickoff here and I'm still having breakfast.
Yeah. Where's your money? And frankly, who cares?
I think unless you grabbed him in the pub or something,
he
would not have known, really. And Molson was already a legend and was protected by this point.
Or unless you saw Basher Dee on the... train platform at Hammersmith Station, like you and I did, and were too scared to talk to him.
The train was leaving.
Well, you saw him doing commentary for Actua Soccer in 1996.
There was that as well.
Andy Sinton did the motion capture.
Good old Sinton.
What a treat.
But Tyldesley and Drury, they've gone through that sort of period, as you say, of internet and so on and so forth. But someone who paved the way for women in the commentary box was Jackie Oatley. Became the first female commentator on Match of the Day in 2007.
Yeah.
And did a very good job as well. And I think the BBC, I understand that one may not think this, but there is actually, depending on what weekend of football it is, there is quite a plethora of voices sometimes. You go to the early rounds of the FA Cup.
Oh, yeah.
Or the FA Cup third round weekend in particular.
It's brilliant.
The local commentary is just wonderful because it's maybe not as polished, or it's maybe a little bit more partisan, perhaps, but in a very sincere way.
But Marcus, it feeds back into my point earlier about the commentators being up on these gantries or out in the middle of nowhere and doing their own thing and being able to do that. this is with local radio commentators from normally from the BBC regionals in the early rounds of the FA Cup, they've got far more license. Mm. They've got far more space to be a lot more biased because mm-hmm. they're commentating on a local area. Mm,
totally. And then
they just get put on Match of the Day because the BBC won't send commentators everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's normally absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's glorious. Like the FA Cup third round weekend is great for that because you will hear these kind of local voices.
But on the female commentators thing, just to make a point, I actually think that Jackie Oatley and Robin Cowan are both absolutely brilliant. They're both absolutely fantastic. And the reason for that, I think, is because something that Pete always says, which I agree with as well, is that, to be honest, it's no coincidence for the last however many minutes all we've been talking about is men, because men have dominated this space. Mm. So the women obviously have to work fucking 10 times harder to get anywhere near it. As a result, they become really good, right? They can't make any mistakes because everyone's far more unforgiving. So as a result, you get really good quality commentators.
Yeah.
I think, as I say, Jackie Oatley and Robin Cowan particularly, for me, are fantastic.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/ramble.
Of course, a commentator will often have a co-commentator with them, a summariser, some people say, as well. And as loath as I am to say it, chaps, Andy Gray was one.
So Andy Gray was, as a pundit and a co-commentator, despite the fact that he's a dreadful human being, was very influential in the space.
Yeah.
No question about that. His some of his lines, if we're going to do lines, and we have to separate the art from the artist or whatever, not trying to kind of give him a pass for the stuff he's done. That era of Premier League Sky Sports footage, if we're talking about iconic lines, Gray was absolutely fantastic at it.
Do you know what?
That thing where he used to have conversations.
Yeah.
Imagined conversations with the players.
And he says, give me the ball.
He says, okay, then I will.
Yeah.
No, put it away. Thanks, I will.
Do you know what, though? And I'm not just saying this to back to... I never actually liked it.
It became far too self-aware.
Definitely. But I do take the point that it is iconic and a lot of people would have liked it and it would have been the soundtrack to a lot of football. But to me, he almost said, right, Mr. Commentator, I'll take over from here.
This is my thing.
Exactly. After the goal went in, yeah, it was always his time because he was a goal muncher himself.
I never quite, you know.
So he's far more influential as a pundit. The punditry before Gray was a lot more one-dimensional than it is now.
Yes.
You look at, if you love Monday Night Football with Neville and Carragher and all the other bells and whistles on that, you have to admit that has come from a place that essentially involves Andy Gray.
It does, yeah.
As a co-commentator, you're right, he becomes self-aware, but he had a great way with it. When he got it right, because of his accent and because of the timbre of his voice, it did sound amazing.
Yeah.
And he set fire to all that by being a complete idiot.
Well, totally.
But his work itself was good.
I mean, my favourite summariser from back in the day, because he worked so well with Barry Davis, was Trevor Brooking. I thought he was excellent. But, of course, more contemporary examples, Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher. Glenn Hoddle pops up there.
Yeah, Glenn's all right. I think Gary does a weird thing now where he kind of makes these weird noises a lot.
Well, when he orgasms.
But that's when he first did it.
That was,
and people seem to like that. And
Torres scored for Chelsea at the Nou Camp.
But think about it, was. But think about it now. The amount of times, and in fairness, it's normally in a Man United game. Man United concede a sloppy goal. Mm. What's the first thing you hear? Oh.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
He just does that all the time. Oh.
Well, that's, and there might be an argument for him that maybe he shouldn't commentate on Manchester United and Liverpool games.
Makes the post-match way easier, doesn't it?
It does.
What's going wrong, Gary? Well,
but a summariser is an important job, and I think sometimes...
Gary's good. He is good.
He is good as well. But what about Chris Waddle, Peter? Gave us that wonderful line when he was so beside himself when England lost to Iceland in 2016. He went, the players, they're all just headphones.
And to be honest, if he dies tomorrow, that will stand up as being the most prescient thing he's ever said. I do believe that.
Just headphones.
We're all just like everything.
What was he trying to say there?
He was trying to say that off the field, their head down, there's no camaraderie.
No, I understand.
They've all got all the kind of like the really expensive headphones, and they're all about that. They're not focused on the task in hand. They just want to listen to R&B.
Get Brexit done. The way it came out was amazing. But Chris Waddle, I always quite liked as well. I think the co-commentary thing is a particularly tough job because if you are, you're almost always, I don't think there's any exception to this, you are almost always known for something else. So you're known for being a football player or a journalist, whatever. And
it's like when Chunks plays in Soccer Aid.
Yeah.
Someone explains to me who he is.
It looks bad.
And I go, this is his main job. And I go, how's this happened? Mm. He's got something else going on.
Well, Chris Waddle actually said a similar thing. Chris Waddle said, you know,
he said, I hate Chunks.
No, not Chunks specifically, but he said that when, you know, I look at how the way people write about the game and they have their opinions, and then every so often I'll be asked to go and do a charity match, a pro-am charity match, and it's embarrassing because none of them can even run properly.
Yeah.
And I understand... That's not the point. Of course, you can have an opinion and be knowledgeable about football and speak about it entertainingly if you hadn't played. Mm. But to someone like Chris Waddle, who's grown up his whole life playing football, you have to concede that's going to look a little bit galling.
Yeah.
It's the same with my old friend Clint Hill. When I was the one to break to Clint Hill that the people who do the marks out of 10 for his performance normally get those filed in way before full time because of the copy deadlines. Yeah. He was furious.
Yeah. Right.
He was fucking furious. Mm. He was like, first of all, what right have they got to give to mark me and my job out of 10?
Yeah.
And two, they're not even doing it properly.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I've gone off piece. Marcus is angry. Sorry, Marcus.
But I understand what you mean. But dragging it back to
a lot of commentary and a lot of your soccer age and how football is produced outside of the day to day presentation of the football and it is just creeping a little bit. It is that kind of influencer YouTube-y kind of.
They're trying to get more personality, more kind of entertainment rather than sport, and it
manifests itself in they get a minibus full of influencers or YouTubers or voices online, wheel them up and they clown around for a bit and they fuck off and ruin another product in my opinion.
No, I totally agree because people, you know what it's like, the big wigs at the top of the tree and these things, they go, we need more personality, okay, let's bus in some personality. They don't think about it, and so
Chicken Shop, what's that?
But they may well have Steve McManaman commentating on Liverpool games because he's local lad, blah 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 blah. Mm. But actually, once in a while, they do get it right. Ali McCoist,
they do get it right. He's an ex-pro,
He's an ex-pro, but also he does have he's a funny bloke. He's got a bit of humour, but also he respects what's going on. But when you have a World Cup game in Russia, where perhaps people's interest is not as high as it might be at Senegal versus Colombia, for example, or something like that. You need an Ali in there because you don't want it to be too...
That's when your love affair with Chris Sutton started.
And ended.
It was a summer romance.
It was a great summer romance. My goodness.
Have me a blast. Summer loving. But summer loving.
But funnily enough, though, despite the best efforts of these bigwigs, as I call them, bigwigs. English commentary is considered to be quite reserved and unemotional compared to other commentary styles overseas. Now, maybe. I mean, Spanish-spoken commentary, not necessarily from Spain itself, but certainly from South America, but Spain would come into that as well, of course, can be quite emotional, it's fair to say. Kind of goes with the culture and the vibes of each nation. And of course, you have the goal whenever the goal goes in, which I personally don't like.
That's mostly Brazilian, though, right?
It comes from Brazil. I think it was first invented in Brazil in the 40s by radio announcer Rebelo.
Because his eyesight was going, right?
Well, this is it. I think some people don't realise this. They just thought, oh, he was just getting in the emotion of the game. That may well be the case, but apparently, as the story goes, his eyesight was going and he wanted to make sure he obviously got the goal scorer correct. Yeah. So he would say goal, and either he or an assistant by that point would quickly make sure it was such and such who scored, and then he was ready to do it. So that is
I love that. It's a great creative way of getting around the fact that he simply should not be working that
well. No, but you're right. That's fine. And I know that often, it can be quite funny for us to hear that and you sort of cry when a goal goes in. But actually, you don't get your Aguero moment. Yeah. You don't get, oh, my dad next back.
It's very generic.
It's far too generic, and it restricts the creativity of each commentator, I think. It really does at the best moment in football as well. So that's my tuppenceworth there. But it is used throughout many Spanish-speaking places and Brazil, of course. Now, quite oddly, though, despite all this, Portuguese commentary from Portugal is very unemotional. Like, it makes English commentary look very, very emotional, like full-blooded, you know, absolute madness. It's extremely different to Brazilian Portuguese commentary. I mean, Andy Brassel was saying that once he had a Portuguese game on Portugal. No, it was a big Champions League game. I forget who it was, but a big one. Portuguese commentary playing. And he said, I'll have the TV on over there, but I'm cooking, but I'll know if there's a goal because somebody will, you know, the voice, the tone will change. And he didn't hear anything. He got back to the TV and it was like 2-0. It's really odd. Portugal's like that. And apparently you don't have that many ex-pros commentating. It tends to be like a journalist or something. And they'll just start waffling about like a player's career at a previous club while the game's going on. The ball hits the bar. Well, of course, he had 13 appearances.
So they see it like an entertainment show, basically.
It's quite strange. I would never have known that. But very interesting, of course. Some sort of commentary quirks from around the world. I mean, we go to Argentina, speaking of South America. An Argentine commentator became famous for making songs from players' names. He sung Eye of the Tiger to a Paul Scholes goal.
I remember watching it,
which was, I Can't Get No Satisfaction with Kevin Phillips' name after
and
he
that
scored.
Went on for fucking ages. That went on. I think there was a chance for the other team and he was still doing it.
Yeah, it's madness, isn't it? What about an English commentator working in America, the guy from the Northeast who always uses those ridiculous...
Ray.
He's too much.
He is.
Not Leopard. Where have I got that from?
Ray. Ray Hudson.
Ray Hudson.
To me, I'm not having it. Although I did quite like it, though. Was it Ray Hudson when, I forget which Newcastle player ran through on goalkeeper and he tried to scoop it? Oh, just put it in the net! That was quite good. One of the finest, or one of the most famous examples of foreign commentary that certain people of a certain age would know from England was the Norwegian commentator Bjørg Lillian, who commentated on Norwegian TV when Norway beat England 2-1 in 1981, which was a very rare win for Norway because I know they're not a huge footballing nation now, but you think about it back then.
Do you want me to read it?
Please.
I mean, like, younger listeners may not have heard this, but it's iconic. I'm just going to read it in my accent rather than the crazy Norwegian accent. And by the way, presumably he was commentating the game in Norwegian.
But they all speak English.
And he switched to English to make this specific point.
Well, I think he wanted to give England a message, and my, didn't he just.
Okay, Norway have beaten England. We are the best in the world. England, the home of giants. Lord Nelson, Lord Beaverbrook, Sir Winston Churchill, Sir Anthony Eden, Clement Attlee. And before I get into this next bit, he's gone for almost exclusively political figures here.
He has.
Until he runs out and goes, Henry Cooper.
Henry Cooper.
Boxer, of course. Lady Diana.
Yeah.
We have beaten all of them. Maggie Thatcher, can you hear me? Maggie Thatcher, we have a message for you. We have knocked England out of the World Cup, Maggie Thatcher. As they say in your language, in the boxing bars around Madison Square Gardens in New York, your boys took a hell of a beating. It's Norway 2, England 1. What a fabulous night of football for football. Back to the studio.
Yeah, I love it. But the voice of Lord Nelson.
Yeah.
Maggie Thatcher.
Lady Diana.
Lord Beaverbrook is quite an unheralded part of the World War II war effort in England.
Amazing.
In Britain.
Maggie Thatcher.
Yeah.
It's just...
Well, at least Maggie Thatcher at the time was the Prime Minister.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. He has just lost it. And that's what it can do to you.
Yeah.
Because that's pre-written. Would that be pre-written, do you reckon?
No.
It feels like it wasn't because of the names are so random.
There's no way that's pre-written because you wouldn't have got that back in the day. And also, I think it was such a surprise that they beat England in the manner they did.
You are not going from Clement Attlee to Henry Cooper if you've written it down.
Yeah, Clement Attlee, Henry Cooper, Lady Diana, and back to Maggie Thatcher. Yeah, that's not happening. It's an amazing piece of commentary, of course. Before we finish, gentlemen, little nod to some fan commentary that we had for a brief bit on Sky Sports. I don't think we have it anymore, do we?
I particularly like fan commentary. I mean, I'm not looking to listen to it for a game I actually give a shit about. But for entertainment purposes, club-specific commentary is very good. Mm. So one-eyed, it's unbelievable, because that's the brief, right?
The Fulham boys are quite good when that guy started on him in the crowd. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
What did he say? Oh, shut up, you knobhead, or whatever it was. It was great. Of course, the famous one, the Manchester City commentator when they won 6-1 at the Swamp.
Yeah.
Old Trafford. Yeah, take it.
That's what they had, the fans, though. One fan of one club, one fan of the other club, and they were bantering with each other.
Yeah,
in many ways.
Horrific. I mean, most of it, horrific. That one, very good.
I agree, completely.
Most of it,
got that right. This is done. Everybody, switch off.
That is the genesis of Arsenal Fan TV.
I think you're right.
People saw that and went, "We can do that."
Yeah. Mm. So they are to blame. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
What about? We should play out the Hamilton Academical one.
Indeed. Talking of amateur commentary, one of our all-time favourite moments.
Is it amateur or is it just club specific?
Yeah, it's a good
question.
It sounded amateurish.
He definitely has had to get another job since then.
Right, okay.
Bobby Bullock shared a little bit too much information.
It's a great name.
We're already winning, aren't we?
Yeah.
He shared too much information when he returned late for the second half because he'd been away for a jobby.
Oh, sorry about the... I hadn't pressed the button. I went away for a jobby at half-time. Excuse me. My term of language, and I've not pressed the wee button on my comeback. So, apologies to anybody who have not heard me this second half.
You're speaking in the vernacular there. Apologies if you deem that bad language, viewers.
Yeah, sorry, it was just a wee bit of poop, and I was a wee bit late back over because I had to squeeze quite a bit. Sorry, I was just changing something to get back to the match, but I forgot to press my wee button. So delighted to be back, we all.
Football, Bobby.
You know,
he's doubled down.
He's trying to get fired.
You know when Boris Johnson, one of his aides, recently just wrote a piece of paper to him, stop talking, and circled it. That's what needed to happen there.
Yeah,
just ridiculous.
But on one hand, though,
he's honest.
He's done that, and he's doubled down. It's trying to make light of it. I kind of get the process. Triple down. He was fired for that.
Yeah.
Does anyone care enough for that?
Did they not hire him again soon after? I don't know. If they didn't, they should have done.
Well, they released a really earnest statement.
It's weird at best, and I've been fired for being weird before.
And it's only last year, right? So it wasn't that long ago. And Hamilton released a really earnest statement saying he overstepped the mark this evening with a very poor attempt at humour. I mean, do we really need people to lose their jobs for that? He only said the word jobby and poop and squeezed one out.
I think
it's long.
Is the graphic.
There you go.
No one's listening, by the way.
It was a wee bit of poop.
Yeah. A wee bit of poop. Yeah, but I think the fact that he's reveling in it, he's a bit like, yeah, go on then. I think it's the attitude, Luke.
Yeah.
I think it's the attitude.
Attitude era of commentary.
Indeed.
For me, I'm sitting down saying, come on.
Come on. You know you've been silly. I don't know who you're showing off to.
Yeah.
Be better.
We did ask the listeners on Twitter what their favourite piece of poop, favourite piece of commentary was that they'd heard. A lot of people, of course, gave us some Barry Davis ones and stuff, which was good. But Pete, I believe you've got one.
Got one from James Proshaw. The GOAT is Ali Brownlee when Borough reached the UEFA Cup final in 2006. And I realise that's why You asked my accent to do this one. Yeah. It's party, party, party. Everyone round my house for a parmour.
Apparently that's been graffiti, well, not graffiti, but like stenciled onto the side of sign of a of the stadium at Middlesbrough. At Riverside. Derek Weston also got in touch saying, we have a long-time RTE commentator in Ireland called George Hamilton. His quips are so legendary that there's a website called Danger Here dedicated to him. His all-time classic is, he's pulling the captain off. The Spanish manager is pulling his captain off.
Yeah.
I looked at the website Danger Here, and it might just be an Ireland thing. I just found quite a lot of it very confusing.
Yes.
Very confusing. Like, it was just a lot of like mixed metaphors. Like one, for example, he lumbered forward like a juggernaut and pulled the trigger and let fly. Mm. Do you pull the trigger on a juggernaut? Probably not. It's like a train pulling into a station, slowing down. There's an air of inevitability about this. It's not going to crash into the buffers. It's going to come to a gentle stop. And finally, for now, Spain have had the possession to win, but not the sharp edge. They're like plastic airport cutlery.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah.
He's asking the listeners to do a lot of work to work that out, isn't it?
I don't know.
Anyway.
So there we are, everybody. What a way to finish.
That's the Ramble Guide to Commentary.
Yeah, baby.
I think we covered everything, didn't we?
I think we did.
We got through the whole episode without mentioning Darren Fletcher. That's a win.
Yeah.
That is a win.
Yeah. He'll be angry.
We also didn't mention Tony Gubber.
Poor old Tony.
Or Peter Brackley.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Brackley. Yeah.
Brackley.
But I specifically dislike Darren Fletcher. That's why I said that.
Not as a commentator, as a man.
Both.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Yeah. Well, that's it for another Football Ramble Guide to everybody. Thank you very much for listening. We want you to tell us what you'd like us to chat about. If you fancy learning more about one of football's defining tropes or one of its confusing quirks, then get in touch and tell us. Email us at show@footballramble.com or tweet us @footballramble with your suggestions. See you next time.
Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Getting caught in the wrong shoes can interrupt your plans for the day. Like when that 10% chance of rain ends up looking more like 100%. When the transition to fall and winter feels more like experiencing every season on the same day, there's the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Cross off errands with the splash protection on the Wool Runner Mizzle. Dash through cold and wet weather with all-condition traction and reflective details on the Wool Dasher Mizzle. Or upgrade to next-level protection with the Mudguard on the Wool Runner-Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. ALLBIRDS.com, code FRESHSOCKS.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him,
Listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.